Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Hey folks, Eddie Trunk here with you, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday. Anywhere you get your podcasts, including the SiriusXM app, Stitcher, Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Grab it, subscribe. Thank you for doing so, and thank you for joining me for rock talk and conversations and interviews each and every week. As I always tell you, the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast originated on my SiriusXM radio show. That is called Trunk Nation and airs Monday through Friday, live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time on channel 106. Nightly re-airs 10 to midnight Eastern, and anything you want on the SiriusXM app, including audio and video. Be sure to check it all out. Don't miss anything if you're in the U.S. or Canada. Please join me daily on SiriusXM. If you're only listening to this podcast, you are getting a tiny, tiny taste of what I do on a daily basis over on SiriusXM Radio. And of course, if you're outside of the U.S. or Canada, well, thank you for listening. And of course, you can't get SiriusXM outside, but get a good taste of what I do, at least a little sampling and some great interviews and conversations. Great to bring you two this week. I'm going to be joined by, a little later on in the show, a guy by the name of Dave Lowy. Dave Lowy is the mastermind behind the Dead Daisies. He is a guy that a lot of people have often wondered and questioned and suspected the validity or debated the validity of the Dead Daisies, given that it's a band that is basically run by an extraordinarily wealthy businessman who hires these band members to play with him and create records. There are some that have been critical of the band for that reason, and others that, you know, just love the band and don't care about that stuff. But what's interesting is the Dead Daisies have had a long history and a lot of different people in the band. And I have never once heard an interview with Mr. Lowy. He has never come into my studio, has never been on my show, although members of the Dead Daisies have many, many times. So this was kind of an exclusive thing and a rare thing for David Lowy to take time out to actually tell the real story of the Dead Daisies, his background and story, which is quite interesting, and of course, a little bit about the band and their great new record. I think you're going to really enjoy that conversation. It's not somebody you hear from a lot, and he had some real interesting stories and stuff to tell about his commitment to music and how much he loves it, despite the fact that, as I said, he's an extraordinarily successful businessman. But we opened the show this week with Dennis DeYoung, of course, the original singer, keyboard player, and member of Styx. Dennis is one of those rare examples of an artist who is open about wanting to perform again with his former band, Styx, although there's nothing imminent in the cards for that. Styx are currently getting ready to go out there and release a new record of their own. They've had a replacement for Dennis DeYoung in the band for the longest time by the name of Lawrence Gowan. They continue on with him, and Dennis continues to make his own music under his own name. His latest studio record is what he is calling his final record, his farewell record, if you will. It's called 26 East Part 2, and that is out now. And we talk about that and a little bit about Styx as well with Dennis DeYoung. So we are going to open the show with Dennis, and we are going to close the show this week with Dave Lowy of the Dead Daisies. One guy in Dennis DeYoung, if you're a rock fan, essentially a household name. And in Dave Lowy, a guy that is not a household name, but I think you're going to find a very, very interesting conversation. So a good double dip for you this week on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. A quick note, as appearances come rolling in, don't forget that I will be in McKinney, Texas. If you're listening to this on post day, Thursday, I'm in McKinney, Texas this Friday, the 18th, doing a Q&A speaking show. Going to break out some old That Metal Show photos. It's going to be awesome. Please come on out if you're in the Dallas area to the Guitar Sanctuary this Friday, June 18th. If you are not in the area and you can't join in person, you can purchase a streaming ticket and watch virtually. We're going to have a great time there in McKinney. And then this Saturday, the 19th, I'm in Oklahoma City, the Diamond Ballroom, hosting Joyous Wolf and Dirty Honey. And then on the 25th, I'm in Houston at Warehouse Live, hosting Lita Ford, Warrant, and Bullet Boys. The 26th, I'm in Tulsa, hosting Lita Ford at the IDL Ballroom. Tons of other stuff coming up. It's all listed on the homepage of eddietrunk.com, but that's the stuff in the immediate future. And be sure to follow me on social media, at Eddie Trunk, especially on Twitter and Instagram. First up, as mentioned, Dennis DeYoung, formerly of Styx. Here's that conversation on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Okay, we'll spend a few minutes now with the guy that was on with us not too long ago. You know him best as the former singer and multi-instrumentalist, really, from the band Styx. It is Dennis DeYoung joining us live right now. Dennis, how you been, my friend?
Good, Eddie, and yourself. And by the way, those two girls, those girls rock. They're both very good. I like both of them.
Yeah, they both have some powerhouse voices as well. Dennis, do you keep up with a lot of like the more current music scene, or do you listen to a lot of newer music and newer bands?
You know, Eddie, I've been recently, while I'm walking and exercising in my house because I'm a prisoner here, apparently, I feel like Ted Koppel. You know, Dennis DeYoung held hostage day 400. I walk around my house. And so when I do that, I go and I go to YouTube and I listen to all kinds of albums that I've never listened to. And then I listen to old albums to see if I still like them. So, I don't listen to a ton of new stuff, but I try to keep up. And, so I know who those girls are. But for the most part, you know, I'm just listening to stuff I used to think was great to see if I still think it's great.
What have you heard, some things or some newer bands that have resonated with you?
Honestly, Eddie, you know this. You're in the business of rock and roll. I mean, nobody's more knee deep in it than you. Here's what radio used to do, Eddie. You know this. You're in Jersey. You know, you're trying to figure out your life. You're clueless, like the rest of us. And you're driving around in your car, in your Trans Am, or whatever you had, could have been a 1987 Nissan, for all I know. And then some guy on the radio plays something. And you go, what the hell was that? And you wait. He tells you, right? Or he doesn't. And you wait again. And the minute you say, oh, God, I love that, you run to the record store. You throw down the cash, and you take something that you believe will make your life better, will allow you to understand the life you're leading better. For you, it was, it was Gene and Paul, wasn't it?
Kiss was my gate. Well, actually, I always say Kiss, because Kiss was the most impactful band by far for me as a kid, and it was my world for a number of years. But I always have to give a nod to a band called The Raspberries, who were really the first time I heard proper rock music and my first favorite rock band.
I love those guys.
Go all the way.
They were all the way is great. I love that, those guys. But, you know, you liked, You know, nobody said, hey, Eddie's listening to the Carpenters. I don't think they said that. So no. But you heard it. You heard it, and you ran out, and you got it, and you took it home, and it was real. It was something you could hold in your hand. And then you put it on, and you listened. You smelled the vinyl. You know, that should be a title of an album. Smell the vinyl. Here they are. Direction Stonehenge.
It should be a fragrance.
Really? So when you come, you get a download, you press a button on your computer, and you smell vinyl. Anyway, yeah. That's what it was about. Rock music on the damn radio. Now, if you're searching out music and you're younger or older, you know, you go on the internet, you got to look around, you got to type something in. And the choices are astronomical. You can't even imagine the choices. And so it ends up being like homework.
Yeah.
I don't like homework. Neither did you. The radio was the key. And rock radio in America is a shambles.
Yeah, so, I agree. I agree, Dennis. I've said that many times. I have a phrase all the time. I said one of the good thing is if you're a musician is that anybody can make music and release it now. The bad thing is if you're a musician, anybody can make music and release it now. You have this unbelievably overcrowded, oversaturated platforms to put out music. So the biggest challenge for fans of any kind of music is finding it and knowing it exists. And it's not, unfortunately, for people like you, the artist, it's not even about trying to sell it anymore. That's icing on the cake. Just know it exists and hear it. Click on it and hear it. That's what it seems to be about now.
I think the whole world is ending. We just haven't recognized it yet. I don't mean that. I look at, don't you? I mean, the last year and a half, all of us have gone, what the hell just happened? Honest to God, don't you? You must know people. Don't tell me you don't know people that you may not speak to. You may not see them again. And I'm not talking about they succumbed to the cootie 19. No, politics has made people, families, and friendships end in the last year, not alone the fact that we're all hiding from a virus. We don't know what the heck's going on. So it's a very confusing time for all of us. You know this, Eddie. And what does music do for us? I can tell you, it lifts us like no other art form.
Yeah.
You cannot go and watch a movie 100 times. You can't read the same book 100 times. But you could listen to one song or an album 100 times and still not be tired of it. This is the magic of what you have committed your life to and myself, which is the mystery of music, which digs down into us, into our soul, into our brains, and allows us to understand the universe we live in. Oh, did that sound highfalutin, Eddie? Be honest, it did.
Well, no, I agree with you. I mean, music is the great escape. Absolutely. Hey, I got to ask you. So you've said this more than once. So you said, you know, about lockdown and all that and the year that we've had and everything. And it's been rough on everyone. But every day I'm coming on the radio now announcing events, concerts, tours. There's already stuff happening. I've already been on the road some here in New Jersey where we have been fairly locked down. It is wide open and has been for like the last couple weeks. There's no more mask mandate here, nothing. It's sounding to me like where you are, Dennis, which is still in the Chicago area, is still pretty restrictive. Are you guys still have a lot of restrictions on you there and that are making you not be able to get out and about?
No, my restrictions are self-imposed. I'm 74, Ed. I'm halfway to 75. And so right now I'm just being careful because I'm glad everything is opening up. God bless it. I want to go back on the road. I'm supposed to tour next year. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to be careful. I'm going to see. We're going to open everything up, and I want to watch and see what happens. Because you know why, Eddie? I've been married to the same woman for 51 years. I have no alimony payments. So all the bands that rushed it out, I believe they've had too many wives or drug problems or they're gambling. You follow my drift? So
oh, totally. I tell my audience all the time, they would be shocked at how many of these legendary, iconic, huge artists absolutely need to go out in the middle of a pandemic because you wouldn't believe their overhead. So I totally know what you're talking about. Thankfully, I'm in the same boat as you, Dennis, but still, yeah, I mean, you know, some of our friends are not as fortunate as far as the overhead situation.
Mothers, don't let your sons grow up to be bass players or cowboys. Make sure they're songwriters, Eddie. And all
exactly.
They're trying to rape us. You know, I'm going to be on a call with Senator Dick Durbin tomorrow about the way musicians are being raped, literally. And forget about me, kids that are listening. I made my dough. Thank you to anyone who's listening and ever bought a Dennis DeYoung record or a Styx album. You made me and my family comfortable, and I appreciate it to as much as any human being can. But the kids today that are coming up, all these people, this one, that one, especially in rock bands, I can't speak to hip-hop artists. I can't speak to the pop stars, the pretty pop stars. But I know rock bands, this is terrible because they have no way to make money. So, oh, we'll make it on the road. Now there's a COVID. You can't make it there. And I'll tell you right now, you can't go out on the road and play gigs for the most part unless you have a record. It's ass backwards, Eddie. You know it. I know it. Technology has really made the job of the musicians difficult. And I'm not talking about myself. Kids, I got mailbox money. Thank you. But for all the bands and all the guys and the bass players who never wrote songs, even in the biggest bands, right now they have to go out. And they have to get back on the stage and the road and work. And me, here I am. I'm walking around my house thinking, when is this going to end? Because I want to get out there and play. And I plan to do this in February next year. But right now, Eddie, you know what I'm doing? I'm having my wife make homemade pizza and I'm watching Netflix.
And you're cashing your mailbox money on all those great songs you wrote that you get the publishing on. You're 100% right. I hear you loud and clear. Let me ask you about we had you on for the first 26 East, now 26 East Volume 2. Was this always planned, I imagine, Dennis, to be a two-part double record released separately like this?
No, every plan I've ever made, Eddie, has blown up in my face. Most of my success has been dumb, stupid luck. I want to be clear on that right now. I wrote a bunch of songs, Eddie. As I told you before, the concept behind my first album, which is 26 East, was a concept album, and it was don't suck. That's it. Don't make songs that people say, this old fart should have laid down a long time ago and left us alone. So I made the first record, and miraculously, lots of people liked it, and we recorded and wrote over 18 songs to try to narrow it down to get the best ones on one. Then the record company, who's Italian, said, we want all the songs. We'll make it into two volumes. And I said, they're Italian, you know, this company. I said, is there any lira involved? They said, yeah, we'll double the guarantee. Now, Eddie, I was never good in math, but I understood that clearly. So there are two volumes that comes out Friday, June 11th. Already there are two songs. You can just go look on with videos on YouTube. Isle of Misanthrope is one pretty cool video. And there's a second song called The Last Guitar Hero, which features Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. And those are two you can see right now. And another song will be coming on Friday. And, you know, people I've talked to for the last month on the interviews, course, what are they going to say to me, Eddie? They're going to tell me your music sucks. I don't think so, but everyone who's heard, I mean, they might, but it's not likely.
Right.
So all over the world, you know, I've been talking to journalists and radio people and da da da, and they all say they like volume two better than one, and they really like volume one. And so I want to thank my buddy Jim Peterick, who the guy who wrote Eye of the Tiger was in Survivor, because he pushed me into this, Eddie, kicking and screaming, because I really believed that there was no interest anymore from Styx fans or anybody for any albums. But I've been proved wrong, and it won't be the last time.
Well, you have said that you've billed this, at least in some interviews, as your final album. Is that still the case or no?
Absolutely. And here's why. Does that mean I'm going to go into hibernation? You'll have to find me, you know, up in Tibet someplace looking at my navel and trying to figure out life? No. What it means is I will continue to tour, God willing, and the creek don't leak, because none of us knows what's going on, Eddie. That last video I made from my first album, I said, what is the name of it? With all due respect, then there's the first thing you see in the video is breaking news. This just in. Nobody knows nothing. That's what I believe. Here's my advice to all of us. Kids, everybody, as human beings, there's two things I think we should remember. Number one, there's only one rule. It's the golden rule. Try that on. We'll have a better world. Do unto others in the same way they want them to do unto you. And number two, a little more humility and a lot less hubris. Because Everybody is constantly shooting off their mouths. Now, you and me, Eddie, we get paid to shoot off our mouths.
Right.
So we figured out we got the scam, don't we? We figured out a way to make a living off this. But We don't hurt nobody because we're not propagating any political system or anything to the American public. We're just guys, you know, trying to bring music to people. But I say there's so much hubris. And if the pandemic has taught us anything, Eddie, it's that we should shut our mouths, be patient, and have a look around, okay? Because here's what I think about settled science. Are you ready? Science was settled after the Big Bang. Boom! There's this giant thing called science. What is not settled is what the hell we human beings know about it. Let's face it, okay? We don't know as much as we'd like to believe we do. And I think humility. Say, wait a minute. Are you with me, Eddie?
I mean, I'm listening.
Okay, that's my theory. Now, as far as the music goes, Last Guitar Hero rocks. Did you hear that track? They play it for you?
Yes. So for clarity, this will be your last studio recording, but you're going to continue to be active touring and continuing to go forward. Now, I want to ask you this, too. You mentioned Morello being on the track Last Guitar Hero. Tom's a good friend of mine. I hang with Tom in L.A. We're buds. I know he's originally from Illinois, but where did the connection come that you had Morello guest on a track on this record? How did that happen?
Well, he said he listened to Babe and he used that chord pattern for all the Rage music. And I didn't even know that. Oh, brother, get out of town, Eddie. No, I told him I knew you. And he said, you know Eddie? He said, yeah, I know Eddie. I know him. And he says, we're buds. And he says, well, if you know him and I know him, I still don't like your music. No, he didn't say that. All right, and here's the straight story now that I've made you laugh. I'm at a party at Adam Sandler's house, Christmas shindig, Hanukkah combination. I'm playing. I got a lot of, you know, Adam's the best. And he knows all these musicians because he loves music. And I'm there, and I do my shtick, my three songs, you know, and there's a bunch of people, famous, I won't drop names. And, well, your buddy Gene Simmons was there, by the way. We talked a little bit, but let me just tell you this. My guitar player, Alexander, says, he's talking to Tom. He says, well, you want to meet Dennis? He says, absolutely. So he brings Tom up. And we're talking, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. He said, you know, I was a huge Styx fan after, you know, I was a Kiss fan. Blah, blah, blah. And he said, I came and saw Paradise Theater Tour. I came and saw Kilroy Was Here. I love Roboto. I love your stuff. And I thought, the Rage guy, the great Houdini. I call him that. He's the great Houdini. Here's the story. My son is playing Rage in the house back in the 90s, right? And he said, what do you think of that, Dad? I said, well, you know, your father likes melody and singers, but the keyboard player, he's amazing. He said, what keyboard? I said, the guy that's making all those, all that stuff. He said, that's a guitar player. I said, what? So then I looked at him, and I thought, well, there's the great Houdini. So anyway, we talked. And I thought, oh, nice. So now, when Jim Peterick and I wrote this song like 3 years ago, Last Guitar Hero, I'm thinking, who's the last guitar hero? I said, I know who the first ones were, but they're mostly dead. They're mostly dead. So I thought, well, Tom, he's the last guy, in my opinion, Eddie, and you know more about this than I do, I assume, who did something unique, the last guy. I think he is. Now, you know a million guys that can play 2,000 notes in every bar.
Right. No, that's a fair point in terms of doing some different stuff and groundbreaking. I mean, when you talk about guitar heroes, I think obviously losing Eddie Van Halen was catastrophic, and he was the guy that I almost put right after Hendrix. But when you talk about modern guitar heroes, I think of the ones we have, the guys that would come to mind would definitely be Tom, certainly Slash, maybe a guy like Zakk Wylde. So those would be guys I would think of as, and by modern, I mean, they've all been going since the 80s. So they've been around a long time, but I'm just talking guys that are in their 50s, late 50s, who are still viewed as guitar heroes. I don't know if there's anybody that's been since Tom came on the scene that you would really look at in that way. I mean, there's obviously a lot of tremendous guitar players, but, and I'm probably forgetting some, but guys that would really be viewed as in that way. So I think you're pretty on point with that.
So, and I met him. So I thought I could ask him, and I said, what do you think? He said, send me the song. So I sent him the song. He said, I love this song. I want to do it. And he did it. I mixed it. And that's the song. And, you know, the song itself sounds like it's the end of guitar players. Because it's funny what you just said, Eddie. You said it. Yeah, the last great ones, they're in their 50s. What? That shows you where music has gone in terms of rock musicians and rock guitar players. So this song, which sounds lyrically like it's about the end of rock guitar players and rock music, but it's really a song about both. It's really about technology and how it moves forward in an effort to replace us. Something I've been, you know, touching on in my music since Mr. Roboto back in 1982, where I said the problem's plain to see, too much technology, machines to save our lives, which they can't, but machines to humanize, which they do. So this is really a song about who's next? Me? You? Okay, the drum machine for the drummer. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a lot of these sound effects now on guitar records that claim to be rock. I'm not talking about stuff you like. Those hard rock, heavy metal bands, they still have guitar players. But this other stuff that is being touted as rock music, I can't find a guitar player in there that I can recognize. And so I thought it was important in this song to say this, as you know, by saying, hey, listen to this old fart. He's bitching about there's no guitar players. I know there's guitar players.
Of course, yeah. Okay?
Yeah, but the idea is, check your rock stations. I don't just mean what you listen to, Eddie. I'm talking about what these stations that claim to be rock music. That's not rock music to me.
Dennis, I only got a couple minutes here because we got a lot going on today, but I want to ask you two quick things. First of all, speaking of your record, and again, 26 East Volume 2 that Dennis is talking about is out on Friday. But I want to ask you about a song that is... So this is your last studio record, and what a wonderful way to end it than with a song that's called The Grand Finale, which obviously is a nod to your Styx history and Grand Illusion. Talk a little bit about wrapping up the record and your recorded career, essentially, with that song as the final moment.
Well, I wrote a song called Isle of Misanthrope, which is one of the top songs on the album. And when I was done with it, on my prior album, I ended with a thing called AD 1958, which is the way Paradise Theater ended, by essentially saying goodbye. And then I realized they wanted another album. I thought, wait a minute, I just said goodbye. So I thought, well, I'm going to do this song, Isle of Misanthrope, and it's going to transition right into the grand finale, which to me is, you know, it doesn't get much better in Styx music than the Grand Illusion. It is our best album. And the ending, which is the grand finale, is something very special to me. So what I did was I made it work musically. The two songs, Isle of Misanthrope and the grand finale, come together. Now, nobody's going to be able to hear this until the record comes out because the video doesn't even have that. But my son, Matthew, he plays the drums on Isle of Misanthrope and the grand finale. And the reason Matt plays drums, because he's 41, he's not a kid, is because he loved John Panazzo, the Styx drummer. And John and him had a nice relationship. And so Matthew decided to use John's ride cymbal on the last song. And so when you hear the grand finale, the last thing I say is, and deep inside, we're all the same. Something I said in 1977, which couldn't be more meaningful than it is today. when we lived through the pandemic, we realized suddenly, although it hasn't stopped people from acting like assholes, we realized we are all the same. And we are all, we are all victims to our own stupidity and choices. And we're all in this together, whether we want to believe it or not. And we should stop dividing ourselves into this dogma or that ideology. And the most important ideology is do unto others. And so the album ends with the grand finale. I do the high C, and I say adios. Now, that doesn't mean, Eddie, since I have a studio in my house, that if I write a song that I think someone might like, that I can't just stick it up on the internet someplace, put it on my Facebook page, wherever they do these things. I'm 74. Do I have to know? No. But I'm not making no albums because nobody really cares, A. And B, it's too much work. If I get a song I like, I'll call you. Hey, Eddie, I'm buddies with Tom Morello.
Hey, Dennis, last thing.
What did you think of that? What did you think of that track?
Well, I thought it was a great way to end the record. I thought it was fantastic. I loved how you wrapped up the record. But last thing, Dennis, and I can't let you go without asking you this. I mean, you have been open and honest on my show and in other places about your desire to do one last run with Styx. Has there been any progress in that front? Have you have any dialogue with the guys? Do you think, with Styx fans listening out there, do you hold out any hope that that could still happen at any time?
Our dialogue has been mostly in Aramaic. Just kidding. I through back channels, you know, the biggest shots in this country that put up the money to put bands on the road. Through those channels, the promoters went, and because they know what it would mean, Eddie, you know what it would mean to the Styx camp. And only one person, as far as I was told, only one person spoke. It was Tommy, who said, no, thank you. I don't know why, because one last tour, just to say goodbye to all the fans who gave us so much, it would be nice to give them back one more look at Mo, Larry, Curly, and Shemp, you know what I mean? And say, thanks for the memories, kids. But I don't hold out a lot of hope, but one never knows, do they, Eddie?
No, you could never say never to anything in this world. You never know, so... Dennis, look, I got to run. I'm late for a break, but it's always great to visit with you. Stay healthy, and hopefully you can get out and play some live shows. I know the fans would love to see that. And we remind everybody that 26 East Volume 1, the first part of this record, is available now. And the second part, Volume 2, as Dennis just said, will be his final recorded statement. That is available everywhere on Friday. Take care of yourself. All the best to your family, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you to Dennis DeYoung. Great to visit with him. His new album is out now. Coming up next, it's Dave Lowy of the Dead Daisies.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Eddie Trunk here with you. Dave Lowy now of the Dead Daisies. I gave you the backstory at the top of the podcast. Lowy is a real interesting guy. He is way committed to rock music despite being an extraordinarily successful businessman. First time I ever had a chance to visit with him and talk with him. Here's how that conversation went. Dave, thanks so much for doing this. I thought it was personal all these years.
Hi, Eddie. No, just never came up, never had the opportunity, but it's great to be on your show. Heard a lot about
It's great to meet you, at least over the phone. And as I've said, I think pretty much since day one, all the guys from your band in the various lineups have been in the studio. We had Doug and Glenn on recently for the new album, which is just phenomenal, by the way. And, I always wanted to get the story of the band from you, the guy who created this whole thing. So why don't we just dive in there? We know that you and your family are successful in the world of business, but where does your music history come from?
Well, I played piano as a kid. My mother was a pianist, and I played piano as a kid. Then always wanted to play in a rock and roll band. I had a garage band as a teenager, just for a couple of years, played bass guitar, and then I stopped. And, I went to... I was sort of pointed in another direction, and I went to university, studied finance, worked in business for a long period of time, but I never lost my passion to play music. And I picked it up again about 20 years ago. So that's really a bit of how I got into it. I never let the passion go, but I didn't have the time nor the opportunity nor the business environment I was working in. I worked in a very large public company. And I just couldn't put it together to play music, and I left working in that large company in about 2000, and did something different for a living. But that gave me the opportunity to also pursue my one of my passions, which is playing guitar, playing rock and roll, and writing and performing.
Well, so Dave, and people will probably tell from the accent, you're Australian and you grew up there. And is that still where you live? Is that still your primary home?
No, I live in New York. I've been living in New York for a number of years now. And in fact, I did start my business career in the United States. We had business here. When I finished university, I actually lived in Southern Connecticut for a number of years. But the last number of years, I've been based, 5-6 years, based in New York. And that's where I live now. But the Dead Daisies came about, it was never a great plan. It's just sort of all happened. I was playing, I started playing in cover bands in around 2000, and I had the chance opportunity to meet a well-known Australian rock and roll icon from a band called The Angels. His name was Doc Neeson. They had some limited success in the US under the name of Angel City. But I teamed up with Doc, and we put a band together and wrote an album together. And unfortunately, he wasn't well, and he actually passed away not that long ago. But that really gave me the taste for wanting to continue. I was always looking for something else to do after that. And I did actually start another band in about 2006 called Mink, which was with one of the singers that was involved in the Rockstar in Excess program, Neil Carlson, one of the runners up when they were looking for a new singer for In Excess. And we put something together, did an album. It had some very modest success, but then the financial crisis of 2008 came about, and I had to sort of focus on my day job, and didn't actually play music for a couple of years until that financial crisis worked through. And then I had a chance meeting with a guy by the name of John Stevens in Australia, who also played in a he was actually the singer for In Excess after Michael Hutchence died. And he's not well known outside Australia, but he's an unbelievable talent. And we were introduced to each other, and I was looking for something else, something new to do in music. And we sat down together for 5 days in one place, and we wrote 25 songs. Or 30 songs, I think.
And we said, well, let's record this. We didn't have a band. It was just the two of us. And John had a friend in L.A. who'd recorded with before. John Fields is his name. And we went to John Fields' studio in somewhere in Hollywood. And we recorded our first album, just him and I and some session guys. I think it was in October 2012. And we came back to Australia and thought, well, you know, we really like these songs. We want to play them live. Let's put a band together. So that was the genesis of it. There was never any grand plan. John and I met. We were introduced by actually David Edwards, who manages the Dead Daisies now. And that's where it all started.
Dave, can you tell the audience, you know as well as I do, when it comes to your band, the Dead Daisies, and there's a lot I want to talk to you about the band and the music as well, but when sure. people talk about it, and you've mentioned business and that you are a businessman and quite successful, yeah. but can you elaborate and clarify that a bit as to exactly what your business is? Is if you don't mind, is it real estate or sure. what exactly is the main business that you're in?
Well, right now I run an investment business for my family. My father started a shopping mall. My father came to Australia as a penniless immigrant in 1952 and started in the real estate business and became quite successful. I joined him when I started. People say, when did you start working? I went with my dad since I'm 5 years old to building sites every weekend. And so I finished university, went into the business. Our main business was building, developing and owning shopping malls. And that was started in 1960. I joined it in 1977. It was a public company, but my brother's involved in it as well. I'm the eldest of three. And it was basically a family-run public company. We had business. We had malls all over the world, many in the U.S., the U.K., Australia, New Zealand, and we sold it. Fortunately, you know, you've got to be lucky in life and everything you do. We sold that business in 2018, but since I left working in that business in 2000 and started a private investment business for my family. Which that I no longer worked in a public company, so that gave me the time and space to do my music. So we started from nothing. We built a big family business. It was a lot of hard work and a lot of luck. Anybody who's successful in life and doesn't admit they're also very lucky is just fooling themselves, in my opinion. So we a lot of hard work. We were in a good business and we got very lucky. So
and how much of your life these days is the business side of your the things you do, the whether it be overseeing whatever family business there is or the investment stuff and you know, I guess what I'm saying is how much time do you dedicate daily to the business stuff versus your fun with the Dead Daisies and the rock and roll side? Are you able to balance it, or is the Dead Daisies to you more of a side thing when your schedule permits?
No, it's not a side thing. It's anything, but I don't have side things. I only have main things. And, I've got the capacity to be able to do both. Effectively, I don't have any time off. I don't think of my work as work. I just enjoy doing it. I love playing music. I'm also a pilot, by the way, and I spend a lot of time doing that. And I just managed to be able to fit it all together. I get up early, go to bed late, and don't waste any time. I mean, I'm always trying to challenge myself and do new things. And I can when we tour, I actually tour with I have an executive who tours with me and. You know, the rock and roll day for most musicians starts 4 o'clock in the afternoon. For me, it still starts in the morning. So I can do quite a bit of work on the road, and then I'm still good to play at night. I mean, I practice every day. I have to because I haven't done this like most musicians. I'm not a virtuoso musician. I'm a reasonable rhythm guitarist, but I have to practice every day in order to be able to play with the type of musicians I'm playing. So I spend a couple hours every day and I just find the time to do it. I don't watch much TV, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm smiling because I know personally just about everybody that's ever been in the Dead Daisies, and we're all friends. And I know also as a fan that I am of them, what talented players they all are, and even the band you have now, certainly. So it certainly will keep you on your toes, I would think, and inspire you to want to pick up that guitar to be able to hold your own on that stage with your band.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I also believe, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants is a good thing. So I always try and surround myself with people in whatever I do who are much better at it than myself. And that challenges you and enables you to grow. So I love the challenge of it as well. But rock and roll, it's hard work. You know, I discovered how hard work it was by actually doing it. It's hard work. The good parts of it are unbelievably good, but there's some, you know, like anything else, you've got to put a huge amount of effort in, and not all parts of it are so good. So, but it's, you know, I feel privileged to be able to do it and pursue it.
Dave, you said you're a pilot. How long have you been a pilot? And are you kind of like Bruce Dickinson, where that you? I know you have your own plane. Are you able to fly? Do you fly your own plane, or do you fly the band to the gigs yourself?
I do. Yeah, I fly. I've got an airline transport pilot license. I also am an air show pilot. I've flown over 1,000 air shows. I was Australian aerobatic champion, and I did two. When growing up, I wanted to do two things. I wanted to play in a rock and roll band, and I wanted to be a fighter pilot. And I've basically lived my life in reverse and done the things that most people do in their early days in my later days. So yeah, I'm a very keen pilot, and I do fly the band. I fly wherever I go myself. I've got to train twice a year. I fly to the same standard as any military or commercial professional pilot, and yeah, I love doing it.
How far can you go, Dave, in your plane? Like, for instance, if you're in New York right now, I'm in New Jersey. We're in the same area. So if I came over to your place right now, I said, hey Dave, let's go to England, or let's go to London. Like, could you conceivably like fire up your plane and jump in and go?
I could. It takes a bit of planning. It's not, you can't just fire it up and go. You've got to submit a flight. You've got to prepare the aircraft. You've got to fuel it. Got to submit a flight plan. Going to England is not complex at all, but going to some other places in the world, it takes a couple of days of planning. But to go to Europe is quite simple. I could do that if I was minded to and you wanted to do it. Yeah, I fly a lot. I've flown a lot for business. My business has taken me all over the world, so aircraft's also a tool. But I just love to fly.
Yeah,
so I'd rather be in. I'm a participant, not a spectator, in anything that I do.
Yeah. I hate connecting flights, so that's an amazing luxury to be able to have to do that. I'm envious to be able, because I travel a lot domestically, and anytime I'm spoiled because living in a major city, I often don't have to do connections. But every time there's a connection, I'm like, damn, you know, to have that is just makes life a lot easier. Now, you were supposed to be on with us last week or 2 weeks ago originally, and we had to postpone because at that time you were in Israel, apparently, and you had gotten stuck there. Did you fly yourself there?
I did, but I did. But, you know, during the rocket fire, the airport was closed quite a bit. And
oh my gosh.
I didn't actually get back. And quite an interesting experience running into a bomb shelter, if you've never done it before in your life, which I haven't. So
wait, you landed in Israel, and then you had to get off your own plane, and then they put you in a bomb shelter?
No, I was already there. My father lives there, and I go and visit him every month. So I was already there, and I was sitting in a restaurant, and air raid siren goes off, and you run into a shelter, and went off a number of times. And it's a complex part of the world. The Middle East is a complex part of the world.
And you were able to pilot yourself out of there once you got the all clear then?
Yeah, once there was a ceasefire, the airport opened up and I was able to leave. So that's why I got delayed last week.
Have you ever had any other harrowing experiences like that, flying yourself in different parts of the world?
Not there. I've had, in my air show flying, I've had I've actually had two accidents. Fortunately, as I said, you've got to be lucky in life. I'm here to be able to talk about them. I've also had 21 friends killed doing that type of flying. So it's not for, it's, you know, it's not without its risks, but, yeah, it's, but it's something I always wanted to do. And I did it. I don't actually do the aerobatics anymore. I think I'm just a little bit old for it now, but I just love being in the front of the plane and flying it. And the challenge of that, it's, I'd rather do that than sit in the back.
Dave, you know, you brought up luck a couple times when you're talking about business and really anything, and that having to be factored in as well. And I agree with that. I mean, you got to put a lot of hard work in. You got to have skill and talent. You also got to get a break. When it applies to music and the band, you know, I think that probably is really never more evident, because if you think about it, you're somebody who has resources to be able to really do what you want as far as a band and a musician, and put musicians together and make records and work in studios and work with noted producers and whatever benefits you can bring to the table because of your success in business. But I think the fact that the Dead Daisies are still not a household name and not an arena headlining band just goes to show you that even in music, there are still intangibles. It still takes more than to have resources and financial security. You really do need to find that special stew, don't you?
Yeah, it's that's right. It's something very special, and it's not something that can be bought. There's no doubt about that. I mean, every band that actually is successful, performers and bands that are successful, they've got some extra special talent. And they've got it at the right time, and they're surrounded by the right people, and it's all got to come together. It's actually, of all the different businesses I've been in, it is the hardest. It's a very low margin, high risk business. That's not a good combination. So, but if you're passionate about it, you're passionate about it. You know, my goal is not to be a household name. My goal is to, you know, make some good music, play some good music, have some fans enjoy it. Hopefully they enjoy it and come along for the ride with us. And you know, everybody who does this, you know, wants to be as big as the world's biggest bands, but that's just, you know, it's generally just simply not possible because of the mix of all the things that you need, the talent and the timing and the luck and all sorts of things like that. So, you know, I think that we've had some modest success. We've got, you know, we've played hundreds, I think more than 300 shows. In Europe, we can play to between 12 and 1500 people of our own fans in Europe. We've played some very big festivals. We've done a lot of support, and we're building a fan base. Fan base is growing all the time. I think we've had over 30 million Spotify plays, which is not a lot in the scheme of things, but it's still 30 million, you know. So,
has one of the challenges of the Dead Daisies in its history been the turnover and the change in members, or do you look at that as a positive and sort of a fresh coat of paint with various records and tours?
Well, look, ideally, I think it would have been best if we could have had one group of people, four or five people, and or six people, and that remain a constant. But it's just not possible today. It's not possible because the people who have been involved have themselves wanted to do different things at different times, it just didn't. If we were a bunch of, you know, 18-year-olds or 20-year-olds who just, you know, pool their meager savings and go out and do it, it's one thing. But at this stage of life, everybody who's been in the band has got other things that they do and want to do. So it's been difficult to keep it together. You know, if I go back over a bit of the history, when John Stevens and I started the band, we didn't have a band. Just so happens that we knew a drummer, Charlie Drayton. I don't know if that name means anything to you. Charlie, he's a drummer for an Australian band called Cold Chisel. He was good friends with Richard Fortus. And we were talking to Charlie and we said, do you know any good guitarists around? He said, well, Guns N' Roses are in Australia now. They've got 3 weeks off. I'll give him a call and see if he wants to come and play with us. And he did. And Richard came and Richard brought Dizzy. And that's how Richard and Dizzy actually joined us. But I always knew that they would go back to Guns N' Roses one day. It was just a matter of time until that thing came back together. But, it, you know, I just to have the opportunity to play with those guys was worth it, knowing that one day that they wouldn't be there. And, I mean, even with, you know, we made three albums with John Corabi, and John has a good solo career. And after, I think he was with us nearly 4 years, we made three albums and we've done a lot of touring, and he just wanted to do his own thing for a while. So that's just how it is for this band at this stage. The advantage is you do get fresh ideas and fresh things coming in. And I see the writing as a collaborative process. You know, some songs are brought into the room by different people. Glenn brought quite a few of the songs, which are already done for this album. But Doug and I put a lot of time in working on some songs, and all of us have input into all the songs. So I enjoy the writing with different people as well. It's got its pluses, it's got its minuses. I know the fans don't really, you know, don't like it, but it's just, you know, it's not a perfect world, and this is the best that we can do at this point in time at the different stages of the careers of different people.
Doug Aldridge, of course, he's been in there for a while. I was joking with him the other day that he's kind of like, outside of you, one of the veteran guys, and obviously an immensely talented guy as well. So of the band, of the people who have been in the band over the years, is it ultimately your decision when somebody leaves, is it ultimately your decision to approve and find the person that's going to come in? Are there people you sort of have like a wish list that you'd like to work with, the people you'd like to work with at some point?
I don't even think about it until I need to think about it. So, you know, ideally this is the lineup, and this lineup stays together, and hopefully it will. If it doesn't, then I'll have to figure it out. But I work in a very collaborative way. It's both with management and with Doug, and who's ever in the band at the time, we sit down and discuss things. There's no, it's not a, they typically know more about it than me anyway. So I like to listen to a whole lot of opinions, see what type of consensus can be built. Ultimately, decision has to be made, but I don't recall too many decisions where if someone's really against something inside the band, it's unlikely that it will happen. And I run my business the same way, and everything else I do, I like to build a consensus. And if somebody knows what they're talking about it as much as I do or more than me, then I'll listen to them if they've got a different opinion. But I don't have a wish list. I don't even think about it. And hopefully this is the lineup for the Dead Daisies. If I have to think about it, I will. Hopefully I don't.
Bringing in Glenn Hughes, who is another incredibly talented guy and a friend for many, many years. I love Glenn. He obviously brings a lot to the table. Effectively, him coming into the Dead Daisies actually replaced two people, because he sings.
Yes.
So he replaced Corabi, and also Marco Mendoza left the band. Yeah. And Glenn is, I think Glenn's bass playing is tremendously overlooked just because of how powerful his voice is. So when you decided, talk about the decision to bring Glenn in and how that came about, because that's a big move. I don't think, especially outside of America, Glenn certainly has his fans in the US, but because Purple, I think, is viewed so much more on a higher pedestal outside of the U.S. than in the U.S. I think, you know, Glenn coming in, it casts a big shadow in a good way. I think he's amazingly talented, but I would think you knew that when you went and got him and knew that a big part of the spotlight was going to shift to him by bringing a guy like that into the Dead Daisies.
Yeah, look, we did talk about around, you know, a number of different names, a number of different people. We did talk to a couple of other people. But Doug, of course, knew Glenn. Doug played with Glenn
right.
in his solo thing for a while, and they were friends. Actually, each person that's come into the band has actually come through somebody who's already been in the band. So Doug, I think Doug suggested we should talk to Glenn, and I'd heard, obviously I knew of Glenn, and we got together and we hit it off straight away. I mean, you can tell in the first 5 minutes when you sit down with someone, are you going to be able to collaborate? And Glenn is such an enormous talent, an unbelievably talented singer, songwriter, and bass player. And I just knew instantly. I sat down and we had dinner together, and I know this is going to work. Let's see how we can make it work. So Glenn was still doing the Purple tour, and you know his solo thing, playing Purple songs, and he'd done that for a couple of years. So I guess a bit of serendipity. I think he may have had enough of doing that, and then I came along and you know, we hit it off together, and here we are. Unfortunately, COVID got in the way, which made life quite difficult. But it was I was lucky to be able to meet with Glenn and convince him to join us and put it together with him, because he's an immense talent and he does cast a big shadow. But Doug is an unbelievable guitarist as well. And I have to say, sometimes it's a bit daunting for me with these musicians. But so far, I mean, I think I can hold my own in the band, playing the parts that I play and what I do. And I participate in the writing. Some of the songs I actually bring into the room myself. So, it was a lucky break to get Glenn at the right time. And he's an immense talent. And I think he's definitely lifted the profile of the band. And I just can't wait to get out and tour with him. Actually, we've got a tour starting in 23rd of June. It's our first date that we'll actually be playing together, even though we've been together for 2 years now. We haven't played a live show together.
Yeah. Does it, when you look at somebody like Glenn coming into a band like the Dead Daisies, does it concern you when you think of that, though? Because Glenn, whether it's Black Country Communion, whether it's the solo stuff, whatever it may be, he's always going to be doing some other things. I know he's very committed to this, but at the moment, but does it concern you because of the history of turnover in the band that this, does it stick in the back of your mind? Do you have that conversation when someone comes into the band, like, hey, you going to stick around here? Is this going to be one and done? Is that ever a consideration for you?
Look, I try not to think about it like that. If we're doing well and they like it and we like it and it works, then they're going to want to stick around until they don't, you know? As I said, ideally, if we can keep the lineup as one, that's the best thing. And I hope we can. I think we can. I mean, just to give you an example, Dean Castronova, he's got a problem with his neck. You know, we're all old guys now, so he just couldn't. He needs some type of operation, and he was struggling to play because of that. So he said, listen, dudes, I'm not going to be able to do this tour next year. I've got to get my health together. I've got to get this issue with my neck fixed. So, okay, Tommy had played with us before. We made contact with him. Great, he can come back. It's great. But, you know, you've also got people's physical, issues that they're dealing with at this age and having done it for so long. So
yeah, but I certainly hope Dean's okay, and Tommy's an unbelievable drummer. But you know what's incredible, and I'm kind of laughing about this, I'm pretty sure Glenn is probably the oldest guy in the Dead Daisies, yet he is probably the most youthful, and he doesn't. I mean, I was joking with him. I was like, what'd you do, man? You found the fountain of youth, especially with how much you, he openly talks about how much he polluted his body in the 70s. I'm like, that somehow preserved you, man. I don't know how that's possible to be like this now. Yeah. It's amazing. The guy's really remarkable. It's incredible.
He is. He is remarkable, and he is youthful, and he is the oldest guy in the band. I'm the second oldest, but he is youthful. We think of ourselves as youthful, all of us. So,
yeah,
you know, that's how it is today.
I got to tell you, Holy Ground, the new album, with all respect to your past records, it's my favorite record the band made. I just think it's a monster, monster record, and it definitely begs to be heard, played live. I'm looking forward to being able to catch a show somewhere. Tell me about the plans to be able to go play live, as things are pretty much, at least here in the U.S., kind of wide open now, and everybody seems to be going out. So what do you hope to be able to do live?
Well, we've got we're doing 9 dates in from June the 23rd. We start in Lake Park in Florida. It's like a warm up tour. We're playing small clubs, and because we haven't actually played together, so this will be the first time. So we've got a show in Florida, in Nashville, Chattanooga, Detroit, Columbus, Louisville, Battle Creek, and in Ohio, a couple of dates. And all on our thedeaddaisies.com on our website. And then we've got a bigger tour planned in September, October throughout the US. We'd hoped that we could get to the UK, but I think it's going to have to wait till later in the year until COVID settles down. Very hopeful that it will. It seems the places where people are vaccinated, it's not continuing like, I mean, one of the first places where there was a lot of vaccination was in Israel, and there's hardly any COVID there now. It was really bad there. Now they've got like 10 or 15 cases a day. So this vaccine really works. And as many people get it, that's how quick it'll go away. So we're looking forward to being able to get to Europe sometime later this year as well, because we do have a very good fan base in Europe, particularly Germany and in the UK. But the next step, we've got 2 tours here in the US, one in June, July, and then in September, October. So check out our social media and see where it's at, and hopefully we can get played as many fans as can get there.
Yeah, I'm looking at the dates now. The website for everybody listening around the country, thedeaddaisies.com, and that's where you'll find the dates. As Dave mentioned, first show June 23rd, so coming up in a few weeks, Lake Park, Florida. And there's a run of dates. And then I see you already got stuff in 22 lined up for Europe. So you've got a bunch of things cooking there already.
We do. Yeah, we do. I'm so looking forward to getting out and playing live again. It's amazing how much you miss it when you can't do it.
Two final questions for you, and then I'll let you go, Dave. Sure. What has been the, from a guy who has been well-versed in the business world, on a variety of different platforms, what has been the biggest challenge for you in trying to establish and break and grow a rock band in the music industry? Speaking of that business, because I always tell my audience, like, it's called the music business, and a lot of times fans forget that second word, and we all know that second word looms larger sometimes than the first for some bands. But as a businessman, when you look at the music business, what do you see as the biggest challenge?
Well, the biggest challenge from a business point of view is that it's a very low margin business and it's very high risk. And as I said, those two things, that's not a good combination of things from a business. But to be in this, to be in the music business, you have to love it and be passionate about it. Otherwise, you just couldn't do it. The returns are meager even for some big bands. I've met a lot of people in the music business, if you like, and I actually don't focus on I don't want to focus on the business side of it myself. We've got very good management, and that's their role. I actually focus on the music and the playing and the performing and the writing and recording, and I love the camaraderie of being in a band, and that's the part of it. I try not to focus on the business of it at all, because that's not the enjoyable part of it. But it is, it's a very difficult business to, especially today, with the economics of it. If you're a top band, you can do well with streaming, but if you're not a very big band, you've just got to play live, which is which is the enjoyable part of it, and try and sell merchandise and do all those business type of things. But it is it's a hard, hard business, and you don't want to do it unless you really love it, because you won't last long in it if you don't love it.
And is there a highlight for you personally in the history of the Dead Daisies? Is there a show, a moment, a gig, maybe somebody you met on the road, maybe you opened or played with another artist that you were such a huge fan of? Do you have a personal highlight or two so far in the history of the band?
I do. We played a festival in Poland. We headlined the opening night of it, or one of the nights of it, in Poland. We played to 85,000 people, and we played with a 60-piece orchestra. And we rehearsed with the orchestra for 4 days in a concert hall. And we then played this show in front of 85,000 people with a 60-piece orchestra. It was it's not only a highlight of my musical career, and it's one of the highlights of my life. I just feel so privileged to have been able to do it. And then also all the people that I've met. I've met so many, made so many good friends, and met so many people to meet so many talented people and share the stage with talented people is a real highlight for me. It's the people and also the fans. I think of it, you know, the Dead Daisies as, you know, and the fans as being one. We're just on this journey trying to make some good music and enjoy ourselves along the way, and hope other people get enjoyment out of it. But for me, the biggest highlight was playing with the orchestra in front of a massive crowd. But I've also had some club shows with 100 people in the audience, which have been absolutely unbelievable as well. So it's not just the crowd. There's so many things about it. The camaraderie of being in a band, and when you're on stage and it's working and it's good, there's very few things better than that in life. So I'm just very I'm happy and privileged I've been able to do it.
Well, I really appreciate the time. I know you're a busy guy, and it's long overdue that we had a chance to talk. And I hope that we can meet. And the next time there's a run through in the studio, you'll have the time to be able to come in. And I really, really hope I get to see a show when there's something where I am, or we're somewhere at the same time, because I love this record, and I can't wait to hear it played live. And now with Tommy coming in playing drums. Dean's incredible, of course. Tommy's a powerhouse. Him driving this stuff, it's just going to be it's going to be an awesome thing to hear this record done live, and songs from it. And I imagine, even though this is a different band than has made the previous records, are you still going to touch on some of the stuff from the previous records as well in the live set?
Definitely, we're definitely doing that. Definitely playing some a number of the songs from the previous albums. A lot of the fans, you know, love those tracks, and we're definitely playing the old tracks as well. I mean, we've done some rehearsals, and Glenn sings the hell out of them, and he's unbelievable. I'm just, you know, it's well worth coming to see us. You'll enjoy it for sure. Actually, we're going to be in New York, I think, 20th of September. We've got a gig in New York, 20th of September, so.
Well, good. I'll keep an eye on the dates, and if you're within striking distance or I'm on the road somewhere, I absolutely want to come out and see the show, because, again, I love the record. The Dead Daisies Holy Ground is out now. Go to thedeaddaisies.com for all the information and updates, and the social media links are there as well for upcoming shows. Dave, pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for the time, and hopefully we'll meet soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Well, my thanks to Dave Lowy. Great to talk with him. A few Dead Daisies dates out there now, more to be announced soon. And that new album, Glenn Hughes, Doug Aldridge, really, really killer. That is available now as well. Thanks also earlier in the show to Dennis DeYoung for joining us. And thank you for listening and subscribing to the Eddie Trunk podcast. Please be sure to follow on social media at Eddie Trunk. My thanks to Joel Pollack for producing. And I will see you guys again next Thursday for another all-new episode. Remember, come on out and see me if you're in Dallas tomorrow night, June 18th, in McKinney, Texas, at the Guitar Sanctuary for a speaking Q&A show. And the other dates from there, including Oklahoma City on Saturday the 19th, Houston, Warehouse Live on the 25th, Tulsa, June 26th at the IDL Ballroom. Hope to see you for these June appearances. Great to be back out there. Can't wait to connect with everybody. And I'll catch you, of course, next week here on the podcast and Please be sure to listen to me every day on Sirius XM Volume Channel 106, live 2 to 4 Eastern, nightly replays 10 to midnight Eastern, anything you want, anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. Have a good week.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.